given that, you know, it took us 3 days to hear back from the state, what's the likelihood of something moving along? And I won't, you know, he felt that there was a possibility, but he said that his sense right now is that the way things are looking up there right now, it might not, might take a long time, was really the sense that I got from him. So I really felt after speaking with him that unless the assembly really wanted us to push forward with something, sort of a political full court press on it, that it may not be the wisest use of our time, given, you know, the city managers just run ragged, that I just don't know if that is an effective way to deal with the concerns that the community has. So that was where I left it at with him, and again, would take guidance from the community, but I just wanted to reach out to him and say, hey, if you heard anything, is there anything out there? Is anybody getting anywhere with this? And he assured me that everybody's running into the same roadblocks.
So Mr. Mayor, and a couple of things I would like to bring your attention to. I believe it was last night, Assemblymember Decker asked Kim to forward the website ready.alaska.gov COVID-19 worker mitigation plan link to the assembly, and that's actually not on the COVID-19 website. It's a separate location, and I have previously, with regard to the local health mandates that I asked the assembly to put in place, asked for us to be able to put in a local quarantine for persons traveling intrastate. And the reason that I had asked for that is because even though State Mandate 12 prohibits intrastate travel unless you were traveling for critical workforce, infrastructure, or critical personal needs, it does not include a self-quarantine mandate. If you go to the website that Assemblymember Decker forwarded to everybody last night, it lists the governor's health mandate 10 and 12, and just below it, it says, if your workers must either travel between Alaskan communities or travel to enter Alaska and begin work on critical infrastructure, you must submit a plan or protocol for maintaining critical infrastructure to the Unified Command as soon as possible. The plan must outline protective measures, et cetera. That's essentially the modified quarantine plan we're talking about. The point I want to make clear is that it says if you are traveling in between Alaska communities or into the state, you must quarantine or submit a modified quarantine plan. So even though the state doesn't have a mandate requiring quarantine for in-state travel for critical workforce infrastructure, they certainly are suggesting that you have to self-quarantine for 2 weeks or provide a modified quarantine plan. That only is in place for persons traveling for critical workforce infrastructure. That is not in place for people traveling for critical workforce or for critical personal needs. So that remains, I believe we have some teeth in what the state is saying here, potentially to ask people coming for critical workforce reasons to make sure that they are quarantining or submitting a modified quarantine plan. But I don't believe we have any authority for someone who is traveling for critical personal needs to ask them to self-quarantine, which is still disturbing for me. The other issue that is outlined in the ordinance that we were asking to be passed is that we have local plan approval for these travel safety plans, or what they're called, several different things, community workforce protective plans or worker mitigation plans. There's a number of names for them on the state website. In the ordinance, travel safety and modified quarantine plan. I still feel like we have to have the ability to view those and approve those and offer modifications. And so figuring out a way to be able to do that is something I'd like to to explore with the assembly. I'm not quite sure how to get that done. I would like to go over quickly at yesterday's meeting that I had with the Alaska Municipal Managers Association. A good portion of that time was spent with somebody discussing the legal ramifications of passing ordinances or passing local mandates that exceed the state's regulations. And the attorneys that spoke knew they were speaking to a spectrum of communities and focused their stuff primarily on communities who were not eligible for the small community exemption. And basically what they said is that you must have your documentation ducks in a row. And that if you intend to pass something that is more strict than what the state has, you have to be able to prove to the maximum degree possible that the mandate that was passed by the state is arbitrary and does not protect the public health in your community. And the argument that they used, that they said you should use, is that you should be able to prove basically beyond a shadow of a doubt of the concern of the spread of COVID unchecked in your community. And my response to that was that's going to be highly difficult for any of us to do with any degree of certainty. But what is far more certain is our ability to address the how quick our healthcare systems would be overloaded. And the attorney agreed that that would be good background for you to be able to justify passing something that would usurp the state's mandates. And the problem is, even though we are a home rule municipality, and by statute, home rule municipalities have the ability to pass, basically to enact rules, any rule that is not outright prohibited by law. And none of these things that we're discussing are prohibited by law. The governor hamstrung us by stating at the bottom of his mandates, this mandate supersedes all other local mandates and orders. And so that is very problematic. And there is a spectrum of things that there is a spectrum upon which additional mandates or local orders more strict than the states would be on. Something like what Dillingham is proposing to do, even though they've gone to the governor asking for assistance, they're proposing to close the fishery. Something like the North Slope Borough did with the closure of Raven, basically trying to commandeer the assets of Raven Air to make sure that mail service to villages on the North Slope Borough continued. The state intervened, and the attorneys said the greater the degree of action you take, the more you set yourself up for an intercedence or a legal challenge, perhaps by the state or perhaps by industry to some degree. And so having this documentation is the most important thing if you want justification for what you might do. So hearing that, I had was able to take a little bit of time, thankfully, from Dr. Prezonka today, and she provided me with some information that I'm not sure everybody, I mean, I know everybody is familiar with it to a degree, but she provided me with some information that I was not aware of, and that we can potentially overwhelm the healthcare system in ways that we might not have realized. I think everybody is familiar with the issue of the ventilators, and I want to clarify that for people. So we've been throwing around, and I have specifically been throwing around, we have three vents here, and so it wouldn't take very long to overwhelm our healthcare system. What Wrangell has is three ventilators that are designed to and one stronger than the other two, that are designed to stabilize a patient who is here and transfer that patient to a more acute care hospital. They are not the type of ventilators that you would find in an ICU for prolonged critical care stabilization like are necessary for folks who are having respiratory complications with COVID-19. And knowing that this was the case, Wrangell Medical Center in February put an order in for 3 additional vents. And those were supposedly, not supposedly, those were on their way to Wrangell because arrangements had been made for them to come here. And they were, in fact, this week commandeered by FEMA to send to areas that have more critical need. Now, there's a potential that we will get those back, but who knows what will happen depending upon how things shake out in other communities where there is a more critical and pressing need. So that changes the playing field a little bit for our ability to care for folks who might need acute respiratory care due to COVID-19 complications here. The other thing that she brought to my attention that I was not aware of is we have a very low number of tests. And as I'm sure everybody is aware, you've probably heard myself or the mayor say on the radio that there's a very strict adherence that is being followed. There's a series of screening questions that are asked when a test is done to make sure that someone qualifies to be given a COVID-19 test. And the reason for that is because there just aren't enough to go around. And we know for a fact that Ketchikan has had a shortage recently as well. Thankfully, and you probably read this in the news as well, the tribal health organizations have made arrangements for rapid testing equipment to be sent to tribal hospitals around and rural hospitals around the state, which Wrangell is going to receive one of those. And that's great. The problem is that the number of rapid tests we're going to be receiving is very low. And so we don't have the ability, the call I was on with the managers yesterday, the manager from ANIAC actually said they had reached out to the governor's office and suggested that anybody that comes into Wrangell, or I'm sorry, anybody that comes into their community must be tested ahead of time. They wanted to issue that mandate. And that way they would know that anybody that's coming in was not bringing COVID-19 with them. The problem is that there simply just aren't enough tests for that to be done and that are being provided to our local healthcare providers. And so these are some of the things that I was unaware of in terms of potentially overwhelming the healthcare system, that just frankly, the number of tests alone may not be enough, not only for our local population, but to test our visitors that come in if they need to, our migrant workers that are coming in. So those are some things to think about. And so, as I said, the reason I had this conversation with Dr. Prezanka is because we've got to have legal backup to be able to explain why we might move forward with adopting regulations more stringent in the states than what we're technically legally allowed to do, I guess, because we don't qualify as a small community. There are other options, I think, for us in adopting some regulations, specifically as it relates to, let's say, the Marine Yard. And although what I'm talking of, the things that I'm talking about would apply to anybody coming into the community, all industries, I'm using the Marine Yard as an example. We have existing code for the Marine Yard, for the operations of the Marine Yard. We could do an emergency ordinance to amend our local code with regard to the Marine Center that allows for different operations, let's say for modified quarantine things in our code that would have nothing to do with a local health mandate. And so that may allow us to have protections in place that would have fallen under a local health mandate that we have another alternative to be able to look. I know I'm throwing a lot out here. So I am anxious to hear the Assembly's feedback on much of this, but I guess the things that I am most concerned about are the ability for us to review plans for local needs. And incidentally, one of the concerns that was raised by people that called into our previous meetings is that we didn't have anybody with medical authority reviewing our plans. Dr. Prezanka has agreed to review our plans as necessary for medical purposes to make sure that that is that a doctor is taking a health professional is taking a look at things. Now, it won't be for every plan. Certainly, the ability to look at the plan for every individual fishing vessel coming in, no. And hopefully, I imagine Assemblymember Decker is going to speak to this. We believe that the state is going to issue regulations specific and overarching for fishing vessels here very shortly. We're hopeful of that, but I'll let her speak to that. But here's where I'd like to get with some discussion from the assembly tonight. I'd like to figure out a way or get direction to be able to continue to try to put in place a self-quarantine requirement for people traveling in between in-state who are traveling for critical personal needs. I'd like to figure out a way so that we have the ability to review plans for our local needs. And my understanding is that the state will be starting to review those and providing them to the local communities, but we haven't heard that definitively yet. And we don't know what the time frame for that will be. And then I'd like direction from the assembly about working with all of our private sector partners, specifically those that are scheduled to bring in large groups, to have conversations about alternative solutions so that we can mitigate to the maximum degree possible any risk of bringing COVID-19 into the community, the ability to keep it contained if there is an outbreak among employees that they have here in the community, and any measures that they are willing to do that would keep our healthcare system from being overwhelmed if they have an employee with a serious injury or COVID-19. And that, again, that's across all industries, whether it's construction here in town, whether it's the crossings program, whether it's our ADF&G, seasonal workforce that comes in, whether it's the fish processors, whatever it is. And this takes an awful lot of time and an awful lot of energy, but that's where I'm hoping to get to, and I'm looking forward to conversations with the assembly about this.
Thanks, Lisa. You're going to open it up to the floor here. I will just, one other thing that I'll just quickly mention is that we were contacted by Letha, our hospital administrator today, and she said she was looking for clarification from us on the language and who had sent the letter in response in terms of them being a hub hospital. And I believe that the search is working with their attorney, and they are looking into why they've been redesignated by FEMA. So just as additional information.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, Ann, go ahead.
I just have a couple of questions and a comment. Is there anything that says that the state has to share their findings on travel plans that have been submitted to them with us?
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead.
Assemblymember Morrison, no, not that I'm aware of.
Even if it directly impacts us, there's nothing. Well, the reason I ask is I saw that they have 1,000 plus backlog in them already. So they're certainly not turning them around in 48 hours. And
go ahead, Lisa.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say my understanding is, and again, Assemblymember Decker may speak to this as well because it came up in her meetings yesterday. Our understanding is that The plans have been split into sort of industry buckets and are being reviewed, and information is being provided. Feedback is being provided to folks who have submitted those plans, and then supposedly they're going to be sent to the local communities. Now, again, we've received no specific word on that at all. And in everything I've seen, the plans are just required to be submitted to the state.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ann.
I just have another comment. I mean, I would like to see for the traveler that comes in for personal critical reasons, having to adhere to the 14-day quarantine, or the, it would have to be the 14-day quarantine. It wouldn't be the modified one. My concern is that we need to tiptoe very carefully around some of these issues that we're wanting to put into our plan, because for the very reason that we're having this meeting, we are acknowledging that we have received notification from the governor's office that we don't qualify. And if we go ahead and do it, you know, I think we're opening ourselves up to some issues. I would just like to see us very, very pragmatic and really be careful word it and what we do and what backup we have.
Okay, thanks, Ann. Julie, you're up next, but Lisa, did you want to respond to that?
No, I guess I would just say Assemblymember Morrison is correct in that this puts us potentially in a place of vulnerability legally, and the assembly has to be comfortable with how we move forward and what that degree of risk may be if we move forward with things. I just it's hard for me as the administrator, as the person who is responsible essentially for making sure that our community is kept safe with our emergency management team. It is, to do nothing, to just sit back and say, okay, well, the state said no, it is what it is. I don't feel that's an acceptable solution for our community. I feel that puts us at far too much risk.
I agree with that also, Lisa, but I think we're going to have the backup to be able to defend ourselves. And it sounds like you are in the process of gathering that data. Just having seen the other side of it, being in state government, sometimes you're not operating with the brightest people. So let's be careful.
Okay, thank you, Assemblymember Morrison. Assemblymember Decker.
Thanks. So I wanted to kind of report back what I heard on a conference call yesterday with folks across the state in the seafood industry who are sort of networking and with state officials, with Coast Guard, with certain communities that are really sort of most potentially impacted, or will be most potentially impacted by the summer commercial fishing season. And one of the reports back from a man named Tom Koloski from the state, he works for the Division of Homeland Security. He's part of the emergency management team. He's the sort of the designee working on food industry critical workforce issues. So he reports to this group every Wednesday, and he gave us some updates, actually quite a few more than our typical weekly meeting. So he said that the state has updated their website with instructions on what they expect in these plans to be submitted to them, which is very useful now. That's the link I sent to you guys yesterday, or had come forward to you guys. They have templates for plans and just some general information. He said that they are making progress on reviewing plans. They still have a backlog, but they are starting to either approve them or send them back to the people that the companies or people that have submitted them with via email with, you know, identifying the places that are deficient and requesting that they change their plan and send it back as soon as possible. He said once that the any if the plan is approved or once it's been changed and then approved, they plan to send all the plans to the communities that are identified in the plans. And if it's a region, my interpretation of what he was saying is that they will send them to all the communities in the region. So I think that, you know, that in my opinion, from listening to this guy for the last month giving updates, he's very straightforward. He doesn't say anything that he's not allowed to say. And so I take that as that's their commitment. However, the question is how long will it take for them to process the plans and then, you know, get any changes made and then get them out to the communities? That's really the question, I think. So the way he put it was the plans will be submitted to the communities and the locals, this is what I wrote in my notes, the locals that may want additional clarifications and plans can have those conversations locally. I thought that was interesting how I put that. They also said that they are committed to coming out with a mandate regarding vessels and that he had a draft as of Tuesday night, but they still don't have that finalized yet. But he said, you know, be watching for a new health mandate related to vessels soon. I don't know what that means. I'm guessing within the next week or so. He also said that the vessel mandate will apply to all independent fishing vessels that are not already covered under a plan. For instance, I believe Silver Bay Seafoods has submitted one plan on behalf of all of their fleet because they're like a co-op. And so all of their fleet is covered under that plan. But there are, you know, many, many independent vessels. So the state mandated plan will cover all those. So that was, I think, the crux of kind of the new information. And then I wanted to talk about where do we go as a city. I do agree that I don't think we'd be able to take significant action given state telling us we don't qualify as a small community. However, I feel like we can take a lot of action related to what I will call implementation of what the state has already mandated. I think there's a lot of room there for us to do things, particularly like some of the things Lisa has talked about, like requesting and or demanding plans from critical workforce that have already submitted this to the state, but maybe, you know, we have an unknown timeline about when the state's going to get back to us. I think that's a legitimate, I think we can make the argument and pass the red face test if we needed to, that we are just implementing on behalf of the state at a local level. You know, we can't tell if people are following the plans like they're supposed to be if we don't have a copy of the plan. Things like that, I think, are very justifiable. And, you know, Marine Service Center guidelines and policies, harbor policies like Craig made, I think those are, in my opinion, those can be viewed as implementation of the governor's current mandate. And, you know, there's Cordova took kind of another step and they required the signing of an agreement by folks who are coming to their community under critical workforce. And the agreement is like a contract with the city saying, you know, yes, I will abide by these things and I will abide by my plan. And here's a copy of my plan. And they ask a few other bits of information along with that signed agreement. So, you know, I think we can thread the needle if we are smart about doing it. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. Before Patty, I see your hand there. Lisa, did you want to respond to any of that?
No, I don't think so. The devil's in the details, trying to figure out how to softly demand that we see plans that have already been submitted, so that we can try to look at things from a local perspective. And I guess I do have one thing to say, and Assembly Member Decker is absolutely correct that there's no way there can be, the state is not gonna monitor whether or not there's compliance with any of these plans on the local level. They couldn't possibly, so we have to do that. And we can't do that without having a copy of the plan. The concern I have is that the state is going to approve these plans without taking into consideration any local specificity that might be needed. And so that is where I'm concerned. And I, you know, the language that Assembly Member Decker read, that Mr. Kowalski, you know, listed off, that can be dealt with at the local level. Well, you know, so far we actually have had lots of people just voluntarily say, hey, I'm coming into town, here's my plan. Will you take a look at this? Am I okay to travel? And because of that, we had a group of us, of staff, I asked for a meeting this morning of Greg and Kate and Dee Dee and myself and Tom to go over the sort of the implementation of how we can continue to review plans that are being submitted to us voluntarily to make sure that we have a straightforward process. And essentially we're using the information that's in the ordinance that did not get passed that, but I'm concerned that we are going to have to make sure that these things are being implemented on the local level. And I get very concerned about us not